Before we head into today's episode of the County Cricket Podcast, we just wanted to ask a rather profound question. What's the most important piece of equipment in the game of cricket? Is it your bats, your pads, your helmet, your spikes? Now, all of those are very apt choices indeed. But as a bowler myself, I would argue that the most important piece of equipment in the game is, of course, the cricket ball, which leads me beautifully into a message from today's sponsors, Manscaped. As is the case in both cricket and indeed wider life in general, it's always important to take good care of your balls. And with the Performance Package 4.0, complete with the Lawnmower 4.0, the Weed Whacker Nose and Ear Hair Trimmer, Crop Preserver Ball Deodorants, Crop Reviver Toner, Performance Boxer Briefs, and even a handy travel bag, you'll have absolutely everything you need to keep your equipment in tip-top shape. Now, to find the Performance Package 4.0, as well as a whole host of other male grooming products, simply head over to manscaped.com, use the discount code TCCP20 for 20% off all of your purchases, and they'll even throw in free worldwide shipping just for you. Unlock your confidence and always use the right tools for the job with Manscaped. So once again, a massive thank you to our brand new partners at Manscaped for sponsoring this episode of the County Cricket Podcast. And without further ado, let's head into today's show. Hello, welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Crickets. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur. And first and foremost, joining me on the left-hand side of my screen for tonight's championship review show, I'm of course joined by my co-host, Matt Wiley, Nottinghamshire's comms intern himself, the extraordinaire that we all love to see here on the County Cricket Podcast. So, Matt, first and foremost, thank you very much for coming back onto the podcast. Obviously, always a pleasure to get you on for a chat about all things county cricket. Have to ask, mate, how's your day been so far?
Yeah, very good, thanks, mate. Yeah. Happy to be back on, yeah. I've had quite a nice sedate day. I've been covering the regular Nottinghamshire game, watching it in my front room, really, and ended quite calmly and pleasantly. So, yes, all been good so far.
Well, that is absolutely excellent here, mates. Yeah, I mean, for both of our counties this week, wasn't the most exciting of rounds for either Nottinghamshire or Warwickshire. But you know what? Points on the board. That's quite vital, in particular for the Bears, as we'll discuss in due course. We're not having the greatest of championship seasons in 2022. But also joining us for tonight's episode of the County Cricket Podcast, I'm delighted to say making his county championship review debut on the County Cricket Podcast, is Mr. Sam Dalling from Somerset County Cricket Club. So, Sam, again, a warm welcome to TCCP for tonight's show. And again, I'll ask you the exact same question, mate. How's your day been so far?
Evening, Aaron. Yes. Day's been good so far. I've been stuck at work all day, so not really been able to get out and do any cricket. And my laptop has just, I think, died on me terminally. So you're catching me, I suppose, at a moment where I need a little bit of therapy. I mean, it feels like a big hole has just been plunged into my life. Hopefully someone with much more technical skill can deal with that for me. But what a delight to be on here talking about county cricket. I mean, that's a way of soothing the soul if ever there was one.
It is indeed, isn't it? The county championship is just the greatest thing on the planet. You know, I've been doing this podcast now for almost 2 years. In fact, in August, it is the second anniversary of the County Cricket Podcast inception, and every single show just come in, smile on my face, even if the Bears have lost. It's just great to talk about the world's best first-class cricket competition, and there's no better place to start really this week talking of reasons why the championship is so fantastic than the game down in Chelmsford between Essex and Hampshire, where Essex emerged victorious by 12 runs in an absolute thriller at the county ground. Now, in terms of the game itself, just to set the scene before we get on to the major talking point from this match, which was, of course, the pitch, as we saw with the debates on social media, Essex won the toss and elected to have a bat first in this game. And this appeared to have backfired spectacularly in the first 24 overs or so, as the Hampshire seam attack reduced the home side to 56 for 5 within the course of the morning session. After this absolutely appalling start, though, an unlikely hero emerged from the ashes for the home side, a certain Shane Snaiter. And Matt, I'll go to you first, actually, mate, to have a little bit of a chat about Shane Snaiter. 71 from 73 balls, 7 fours, 2 sixes, a 97.26 strike rate. before I get onto the stats for the season, because he's having an impressive time with both the bats and the ball in hand for the 2019 champions, how integral and how important was this knock in the wider context of this encounter?
Massively, wasn't it? Yeah, it's just that, I mean, I'm a big fan of that. Like, it's obviously we can come on to him in a second, but it's a sort of Keith Barker role, isn't it? That tail ender that will just, it's almost like he'll dig in and he won't let go, won't they? And it's exactly what you need in a championship innings when you just, you know, score runs without getting out. But at the same time, if you can score quickly like he did, then fantastic. And that sort of, it can both demoralise the bowlers, because if the bowling side think that they're getting close and, you know, you're getting into the tail or certainly into the lower middle order and you think, oh, we've got a chance of shooting them out here, and then he comes in and does that, it demoralises them. And at the same time, it has the opposite effect, of course, on Essex and on the batting side, because it gives everyone's spirits a little lift, isn't it? Bonus points, it was massively crucial in getting them over that line for that that batting bonus point, which, you know, even one, as we've seen in the past, even one or two of those can be the difference. It was just, yeah, everything that they needed. It gave them a mental boost, didn't it? It kept Hampshire out there for longer, which is always, we hear about this a lot, don't we, in terms of you go out to field, and if you've kept out there longer than you're expecting, it can then have a detrimental impact on your batting. Yeah, it was just everything. It was right place, right time, and it was just everything that Essex needed.
Well, it most certainly was, Matt, and I did mention the wider context of Shane Snaiter's season. So far, 320 runs, an average of 32, striking at 77.48. Bear in mind that this guy bats at 9 and 10. I think that is quite staggering, to say the least. And as you mentioned, he's played a pivotal role in terms of those lower order runs. They're so important, in particular in a low scoring game like this one. You could argue it made all the difference for Essex in this particular fixture. But aside from Essex's batting, that 71 from Shane Snaiter helped the home side get to a total of 238 all out by the end of their first innings. We now go on to Hampshire's batting. And Sam, this is a beautiful place to bring in yourself, mates, as we go into the discussion about the pitch. Because Simon Harmer, in the first innings, took 8 for 46 from 14.2 overs, a 3.2 economy rate. And he just absolutely rattled through that Hampshire top, middle and lower order, it has to be said. So first and foremost, about the pitch, Sam, what did you make of it? Because there's been a lot of talk. 28 wickets over the course of this game did fall the spin bowlers. What did you make of the conditions in Chelmsford this week?
Same for both teams. Nothing. You know, it's Chelmsford. You've got to be able to prepare a home pitch to your advantage. I think there's a little bit of sour grapes. I know Vince has talked about it. I don't know. I don't play at that level. I wasn't physically at the ground, so I don't know if there was anything untoward about the pitch. But Liam Dawson got 10 for first time he's done that. And actually, he was the first spinner other than Simon Harmer to take a 5 for at Chelmsford since something like 2014, right? Everybody, it's not a secret, the pitches they prepare for him down there. Early season, it tends to be dead ones and you get low scoring draws. And then they prepare them for Harmer. So you turn up and you play your spinners and you take wickets as well. So in terms of the pitch, I've got no real problem with that whatsoever. In terms of Simon Harmer, I mean, like, what a cricketer. I've run out of superlatives for him. I just love... He seems to be the perfect fit for Essex. He is a class act, right? In all facets of the game, batting, bowling, catching. He's a decent skipper too. I love how much he loves Essex, though. I still think back to the first game of the season it was the second game, where he'd been playing a test match in South Africa, finished on the Monday, was playing for Essex again on the Wednesday. Like, that's what you want from your county pros. He's kind of your perfect overseas pro. They'll be a bit gutted that he's back in the South Africa set up for the summer, really. But I've used all the superlatives in the past there are for Simon Harmer.
Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it, to create a new word in the English language to really sum up just how big of an impact he has for Essex as a county cricket club. I'd just call him a king, to be honest. Regal, royal, majestic, any of the above. He's an absolute exceptional cricketer, and
weren't they his best match figures? When you read a headline that says it's Simon, you know that Simon Harmer's previous best match figures were pretty blooming good. So to see that headline, you're like, right, well, this is really something special. If he can outdo himself. It's like on Mario Kart, when you know the really good people used to basically, you could race against your own shadow rather than against other racers. That's basically what Simon Harmer does in county cricket.
It's a good analogy, that. I used to do that on Forza. Again, that's another racing game. I used to be quite decent at that. Unfortunately, don't play anymore. But yeah, in terms of Simon Harmer, you mentioned those match figures. 15 for 207. His previous best match figures, I think he took a 14 for, again, for Essex. No surprises there, but just remarkable. And let's actually talk about the run chase for Hampshire in this particular game, because Essex didn't score a ton of runs in their second innings. There wasn't really much resistance aside from Adam Rossington scoring 60 from 71. And Simon Harmer himself, funny enough, scoring 61 from 99, which included 7 fours and a 6. So quite the game for Mr. Harmer down in Chelmsford this week. But as a result of that slightly underwhelming batting performance in the second innings, Hampshire had a target of 299 runs in order to score victory at the county ground. And they got off to an absolute flyer. Felix Organ was absolutely exceptional. 65 from 79 balls, 3 fours, 5 sixes, 3 of which were consecutive against Simon Harmer, did put Essex on the back foot. But as soon as Simon Harmer dismissed him in the 26th over with Hampshire 97 for 1, everything started to collapse. From that really commanding, imperious position, the visitors found themselves 213 for 8 in the 48th over of their second innings. Enter Keith Barker. Matt, you mentioned him before, an absolute legend in county cricket. One of my favourite all-time players. I've got nothing but good things to say about King Keith. He's an absolute hero of mine. But both he and Kyle Abbott actually appeared as though they could get Hampshire across the line in this game. They put on a quick fire 41 partnership for the 9th wicket to take Hampshire up to 254 for 8 by the end of the 60th over. However, the man, the myth, the legend himself, of course, Simon Harmer, aided by Aaron Beard, unfortunately ended Hampshire's hopes with Beard trapping Abbott LBW and Simon Harmer taking the massive wicket of Keith Barker in the 66th over to leave Hampshire all out for 286 runs and take Essex to victory by a tiny margin of just 12 runs. What a game of cricket. Outstanding advert for the county championship. But Matt, just one final question from the game. Keith Barker's final shot. Do you think he should have gone for the 6? There weren't many runs on the board. He did have to take the onus on himself with Brad Wheel at the other end. Do you think he made the right decision? Was it worth the risk in that moment or not? I know hindsight is quite a useful thing.
Oh, yeah, hindsight's a wonderful thing, isn't it? Oh, I would love to be able to be in the position of saying, oh, no, I'd love to be able to be in the position of having commanding the level of respect to be able to tell him that he shouldn't have done it, because it's like, you know, this bloke being so infinitely more experienced, so infinitely better at cricket. But it was a bit bizarre, wasn't it? It was odd to try and... I mean, the thing is, if he goes for it and it comes off, then everybody goes, oh, fantastic, you know, excellent. Now we're in this situation where it didn't. You know, it's fine margins, isn't it? That's exactly what you said, it by the finest margin or by the barest of margins. And yeah, it's those moments that change the game. Personally, we've seen it with, actually, Hampshire did take on a bit of Baz Ball, didn't they, by promoting James Fuller to 3. You know, they were willing to try and show off a bit of aggression. And I think, you know, that's the way you combat a spinner like Simon Hammer. That's the way you combat a spinner, isn't it? You know, you attack him. Take Nathan Lyon as an example. You know, he took a bit of elite runs because teams like to go after him because that's the way that you combat him. So, I wouldn't have blamed him if he'd done it. I don't blame him for not doing it, for maybe retreating into his shell a bit. But I wouldn't have minded if he'd done it. Let's say that.
To be honest, Matt, I'd agree with the last part of that statement. I didn't mind it because, again, the onus was on him. People were saying, oh, well, he should have just dug in. But that's a lot easier said than done against Simon Harmer. And at that moment in the game, I mean, Brad Wheel, he can bat a little bit, but that's a number 11 at the other end, and as the experience, the veteran, I suppose, person in that situation, the onus is on you. The responsibility does lie heavy on your shoulders. So I don't think that Keith obviously could have changed his approach, but I don't think you can blame him, to be honest. A great game of cricket. Again, a fantastic advert and a massive win for Essex, who, as we'll discuss when we get to the table, has definitely kept them in the hunt for this Division 1 title.
They weren't happy about the ball, though, were they, Hampshire? But wasn't it that Sir Felix Organ basically took on Harmer, kept hitting sixes, and so Essex ran out of spare balls, and James Vince may have suggested that the ball was harder than it should have been, the one they ended up using, and will point to the fact they lost a relatively large number of quick wickets. I mean, he did raise that himself.
It's an interesting one, Sam. Go on. What are your opinions on that then, before we go on to the Northants Warwickshire game?
Just feels a little bit like moaning to me, to be honest. Like, I've raised it and said that, but I think, you know, it just feels a bit like, well, let's clutch at straws. It's just a bit of a freak, isn't it? I mean, what do you do in that situation? You haven't got a load of balls that are every... There's not 90 times six... I can't do the maths. 80 times six balls. You have an exact science. It's interesting, though, isn't it? The umpires have gone... slight preference to the bowler. I mean, we don't know exactly what they had. Maybe it was either that hard ball or something that's back end of 80 overs because they'd lost so many. But, I mean, they made the point, Hampshire, and it will sting because it was a key game for them in the title race, really. And that's what will really be hurting them.
Well, it will. And to be honest, when it does come to those post-match comments from James Vince, it does hurt. And obviously, in the heat of the moment, you are going to say things. But for Hampshire, this was a big, big defeat. And Matt, we've been mentioning it all season, haven't we? In particular, with the bat in hand, this was always going to be the crux of Hampshire's title run in 2022. But, you know, that seam attack, and I could read out those stats. You can look at the team on paper. They've got the seamers to win this. Yes, this is a setback. But just think back to Warwickshire last year. Warwickshire got hammered by Durham and still won the trophy. They actually lost at home as well to Hampshire in the second round of the divisional stage. So, yes, it's a setback. But with that being said, it's the Championship. Anything can happen. Surrey are not infallible. Yes, they're unbeaten so far, as we'll discuss when we get onto their game against Kent. But, again, the title race is still wide open. Hampshire fans support the team, get behind them. And who knows, we could be seeing the trophy go to Hampshire and Southampton for the first time since 1973. But moving on from the South East then, let's head up slightly north to the East Midlands. Let's go to Wantage Road to the game that I was at this week, which was Northamptonshire versus Warwickshire. Now, in terms of the game itself, just as a little bit of a pre-warning, we're probably not going to dissect it that much because it was a bit of a bore draw. But I do have to mention some standout batting performances. First and foremost, Emilio Gay, 70 from 79 balls, 13 fours. And something which really impressed me with Emilio's game this week wasn't just the intent, it wasn't just the approach, but his pull shot is absolutely exceptional. It races to the boundary, and yes, as many people who would have watched the live stream would have noticed, the outfield at Wantage this week was lightning quick. I would argue it's probably quicker than the Middlesex Gloucestershire outfield at Radlett in the T20 Blast, but I thought he played really nicely. And then talking to players who played absolutely magnificently this week, Rob Keogh, 130 from 155 balls, 24s. Yes, the Warwickshire bowling wasn't great. A lot of balls straying down the leg side. The short balls weren't short enough. So again, they were at pulling and hooking height. But I thought he played the situation quite magnificently. And third, but by no means least, Josh Cobb, 88 from 103 balls, 17 fours, and 85.43 strike rate. Those three were incredibly impressive, weren't they, Matt?
Yes, they were. Yeah. I mean, like you said, lightning quick outfield, so you've got to take advantage of that. But like they did with bat in hand, and it sounds like, to be honest, like Warwickshire, yeah, when you're missing your lengths like that, we've already talked about it, haven't we? Fine margins, chopping a few inches either way, and it's a short ball that you're about, so you've got to duck out of the way, or it's at pulling height, which you can just, you know, gently touch away to the boundary. So, yeah, they obviously profited from the fact that Warwickshire work quite at the races for some of the game, but you've got to be in the position to take that. And did they take that? They certainly did. Ryan Rickleton as well come in only recently. You know, would he adapt? How would he get on? And I think the answer to that is very well indeed as well. You know, he got a ton, didn't he? They were flowing. And to be honest, I think again we've said this, haven't we, about Northamptonshire? You know, they probably were one of the pre-season favourites, or certainly considered one of the more likely ones to be fighting at the bottom end of the table. When, you know, two teams go down in a 10-team league, it's a tough ask. And they've Wiltshire, last season champions, they've gone head-to-head with them and they've come out level. And that's Andrew Kinnear's everyone who wrote them off backtracking. So there you go.
Well, yeah, mate. I'd say again, just as the game at Edgbaston, probably a preferential result for North Ants compared to Warwickshire. But I'll tell you what, fair play to those three. I thought they were absolutely fantastic. And someone else, I was going to mention him a bit later, but seeing as you mentioned Ryan Rickleton's second innings 100, which was fantastic, by the way, and the way in which he brought up his 50 with a check drive back down the ground for four. He is such a good player. There's a reason why he averages over 50 in first-class cricket. Championship debut, scoring 103. My goodness, this boy has got a very, very high ceiling indeed. But in terms of someone who's obviously a lot more experienced in county cricket, and in my view, is ridiculously underrated, and Sam, I want to know your thoughts on this player, a certain Luke Proctor, who in this game scored a career-best 144 outs from just 204 deliveries. Now, if we look at his stats so far this season, he's currently the sixth leading run scorer in Division 1 with 609 runs, average of 121.8. And I love the strike rate, 45.85. Proper gritty batsman is Luke Proctor. Sam, what do you make of Luke Proctor as a player, and just how important is he for Northants' survival chances in 2022?
Second question first, invaluable. That experience there, they lost Rossington last minute. There's some very talented batters there, but some of them are a bit younger, early stages of the career, first time in Division One, a difficult potential relegation fight, although it's still effing ridiculous that we don't actually know. No one knows if it's what they're actually playing for. Is it a relegation fight? Is it to try and get into three groups of six? But that's by the by. Proctor, when you started saying there's someone that you wanted to talk about, I was hoping that's where you were going, and it quickly became apparent. If memory serves me right, he didn't start particularly young. He made his Lancashire debut, or maybe when he was in his mid-20s, he'd been playing club cricket around there and doing quite well. And I think he started as more of a bowler, really, didn't he? Bowls left arm seam. I'm sure I saw him down at Somerset. And if I've got that wrong, apologies. But yeah, I mean, that I hadn't quite clocked his average for this season. That is something quite ridiculous. But yeah, a serious cricketer, a serious head, showed, because he initially played a lot of white ball cricket, so he's able to be disruptive, but is also showing a maturity that his side dearly need. And it's just great because he's best player in the world, not going to play for England, never was really close. But that's the whole point. This idea that we all know who is pushing it is that as magnificent as it's been to see England thriving like that, right? County cricket doesn't exist just for that purpose. It's brilliant that it does. Players do make the step up. And I know, you know, McCullum kind of gave his rallying cry saying, oh, county cricket should play like this. And suddenly Phoenix Organ starts going nuts down at Chelmsford. It was almost like perfectly timed. But there's also, it's a career. It's a thing of its own. We love it of its own right. But it's also a career of its own right for someone like Luke Proctor that is his job. That is what he does. He may well love doing it, but it's his job too. So you can't take that away. And he is just a very good example of someone who won't go on to the next level, but is playing Div 1 cricket and scoring hundreds. So that'll do for me. That'll probably do for him too.
Absolutely. And Sam, it'll do for me as well, because it's fantastic for us to watch as county cricket fans. And again, a great point. County cricket, obviously, the ultimate aim is to produce England players, but don't we love county court heroes? You know, the Darren Stevens, the Michael Hogans of the world, the Luke Proctors, the Keith Barkers. It's all about that mix, the eclectic mix of county court heroes and obviously international superstars. And talking to someone who unfortunately no longer plays international cricket, in my view, was treated quite harshly, a certain Dominic Peter Sibley from Warwickshire County Cricket Club brought up his 17th career first-class ton at Wanted Road this week, scoring 102 from 273 deliveries. Now, I mentioned there about Rob Keogh. He smashed around about, 17 fours, I believe it was, or 20 fours in his innings. Sibley scored six. So this was a proper, gritty Dom Sibley innings. And to be honest, I loved every single minute of it. And this is where I now go on to the, or at least my personal player of the match in Northampton this week. Talking to people who can do it all. A certain Michael Burgess. In Warwickshire's batting innings, he scored 77 from 80 balls. 14 fours at a strike rate of 96.25. So that's first and foremost. Sam, you mentioned about Bazball. Michael Burgess probably did take that upon his shoulders to send a message to Rob Key this week and say, look, I'm here for selection. And again, if we look at the stats so far this summer, he's the fifth leading run scorer, 650 runs, average of 65, striking at 79.17, which, by the way, for players who have batted for more than 10 innings, is the highest in Division 1 so far. But aside from his batting, and I never, ever in my wildest dreams thought I'd be sat here on an episode of the County Cricket Podcast talking about Michael Burgess's military mediums. But here we are. Michael Gregory Kieran Burgess has got a first-class wicket. I cannot believe it. I've been laughing. I've been smiling for the past 4 hours now. It's one of the greatest moments that I have had as a cricket fan in 12 years. I honestly, this has made my day. And just to give it some context, right, the game was done by this point. Ryan Rickleton had scored his ton. Luke Proctor turned up as well. And Warwickshire after tea came out onto the field with Craig Miles, a seam bowler, with the gloves on. Michael Burgess's gloves, funnily enough, in a short sleeve shirt, skins, and a sun hat. And the first bowler to come on was Michael Burgess, rolling the arm, giving it the big uns. You know, he thinks he's going to come on and take a wicket. And his first over, I think, went for six or seven runs, but the balls he was bowling weren't great. They were what you'd expect from a wicketkeeper. And then, out of absolutely nowhere, he bowls a ball on around about a fifth stump line to Rob Keogh. Rob Keogh takes a step across, goes for an expansive drive. It catches the outside edge, and Craig Miles takes a really smart catch to his right-hand side, and the Warwickshire team celebrate as though they've just won the game. Brilliant scenes at Wantage Road this week. Michael Burgess unleashed the inner Imran Tahir. All this, by the way, whilst looking like a prime Peter Siddle with the zinc sunblock all over his lips. It's one of the greatest, greatest moments that I've seen as a Warwickshire fan, and arguably in 127 years of the club's county championship history, one of the funniest, without a shadow of a doubt. So Michael Burgess, take a bow. Obviously the results, it was fair for both sides. I think both sides did deserve to take 12 and 13 points respectively. But again, when we think of board draws, you don't usually remember one moment. I think this week in Northampton, we have got something to take with us for a very, very long time to come. But aside from that game then, between the West and East Midlands sides at Wantage Road, let's head down to South London. Let's go to the Kia Oval, where Surrey and Kent played out a very high-scoring draw in Vauxhall. Now, Matt, I'll go to you first for this one, mate, because we've had this conversation all summer long, and for some reason, teams aren't listening to us. Kent won the toss and elected to have a bowl first at the Oval. What did you make of that decision? And Sam, I'll ask you the exact same question in due course as well.
Very, very smart, because they'd loaned in Toby Patman. There you go. That's the
lovely action, hasn't he?
Oh, yeah.
He's gorgeous.
Yeah. No, so obviously, being serious, he managed to get rid of Rory Burns, which set off much laughter in our group chat. But yeah, it's strange, isn't it? It's strange. When you know that your strength obviously isn't in the bowling, quite the opposite, in fact, for Kent, you know, as we've seen repeatedly. And you know that the Oval as well, a place that, let's say, it's quite conducive for batting. It's quite friendly, isn't it? It was odd. I'm not quite sure what the plan was. You know, you don't want to allow yourself to get batted out of the game. Maybe it was a sense of, well, we want to bat last on it because it'll get easier to bat on. Let's see if it flattens out. which is, I suppose, a logical call in at the Oval, because they have got a tendency to do that. But I like the fact that maybe they are backing themselves. I like, you know, let's put the rose tinted specs on and say they are backing themselves and they want to give themselves a shot with the ball. But there's such a thing as overconfidence, isn't there? There's such a thing as you need to realise that this is not your strength. You know, you put yourselves in an immediate place of advantage by winning the toss. Use it. You know, like take the opportunity to bat first and utilise your strength, get runs on the board. And yes, if you then batted out of the game by Surrey in their second inning, at least you've got runs on the board. At least you've then got something to bowl at rather than just immediately unleashing probably the country's worst bowling attack on probably the country's country's best batting lineup. It was an odd one. I'll be honest, it was an odd one.
It was, Matt, and again, I just cannot put my finger on it. If Warwickshire win the toss and bowl first at the Oval, I'm there for all 4 days for that. I'm not going to be happy, to say the least. I would not be a fan of that decision at all. And you just look at the ultimate outcome of that decision to win the toss and bowl first. Surrey 673 for 7 declared within 129.2 overs. Hashim Amla scoring 124. Ben Geddes, really impressive this week, and we'll talk about another impressive Surrey youngster in due course, but he brought up his maiden first-class ton, scoring 124 from 242 deliveries. Jamie Smith scoring 55. Sam Curran, maiden first-class century. I think it goes without saying, but a lot of people absolutely delighted for Sam, and you could tell just how much it meant to him. Wonderful celebration. He scored 126 from 75 balls. Will Jacks, the name on everybody's lips across formats right now, 103, not out from 92 balls. And even Gus Atkinson, who's developing into quite the bowling all-rounder in Jordan Clark's absence, scored 42 from 65 balls. So, Sam, I think it goes without saying, but using the power of hindsight, probably wasn't the most sensible decision, was it?
I'd like to think Jack Leaning walked back into the dressing room and told people, a bit like in a club game, when it's really hot and no one really wants to field first, and the skipper's gone, yeah, actually, no, we're going to field first, we're going to chase it. And Jack Leaning's gone back into the changing room and gone, pointed over, gone, lads, we're bowling. And they were like, oh, right, lost the toss then, did you? He went, nah, won it. And the reaction, I'm not going to swear on the podcast, but the bowlers just must have been FFS, Jack. Like, what are you doing? There's so many factors that just... it was always going to be that way, wasn't it? Don't they average 540 or something plus that they concede in the first inning? So every time, every week, you look at the scorecard, oh, Kent have gone for 600 first up. Gluttons for punishment, I'd say. I mean, Surrey are class. Take nothing away from them. There are those at Surrey as well who would, I reckon, would say that Sam Curran, not that he's not a good bowler, but he's a batter who bowls. There are people that think he actually will turn into a top order batter and could offer more internationally in white ball cricket with the bat than with the ball. Amazing that he didn't have one until then. I mean, yeah, you look at that batting lineup. Geddes, he got 100 down against Sri Lanka development 11 as well.
In Guildford,
looked quite good at Taunton when I saw him as well. And I always think it's a funny one with Surrey. They get so much stick for bringing players in and flashing cash and whatnot, but actually their academy is just producing player after player. And there's a lot of people in that, the experience, the likes of Curran, and, well, I suppose Curran's a bit different, so maybe not a great example, but someone like Burns. There's a lot of players at that club that have come through that academy, and there are players even in a side that was invincible until a couple of weeks ago and is going to probably go on and win the championship at a bit of a canter. You've still got people like Geddes, and I know you're probably going to talk about Laws in a bit as well, coming through and getting games. So there's a real good balance there. You can see why it's working for them, Surrey.
You can indeed, Sam. And to be honest, you've set me up beautifully there about the conversation for Tom Laws, because he has really impressed me this week. He also played in that game against the Sri Lanka development side down at Guildford. And again, just he makes an instant impact and he just comes across so well. He really does. He seems like a pretty good young lad and obviously a very, very talented player coming through from Cranley, but he took 4 for 51 from his 13 overs as Kent were bowled out for 331 on what was a very good batting surface. But aside from Bell Drummond, who we'll touch upon in a lot more detail heading into the second innings, he scored 102 from 202 balls, and Jack Leaning, the standing skipper for Sam Billings, also chipped in with 75. I just felt like this week Kent struggled to seize the initiative with the bat in hand, and I do think Tom Laws was a massive reason behind that. I thought his control's brilliant, and Matt, we mention it all the time here on the podcast, in particular with young bowlers. In first-class cricket, one of the absolute cardinal sins that you can do is search for wickets, go too full, over-pitch the ball. And I just think Tom Laws put it on that penny piece, kept it in the avenue of uncertainty, the corridor of apprehension, whichever you want to call it. I just thought he really did impress. And for a county championship debut in front of your home crowd, you are playing for Surrey, who of course have got so much history, so much tradition, 19 county championship trophies already in the cabinet. He did make an instant impact, so fingers crossed for Tom Laws he can stay fit, and of course, going to have many more memorable performances in a Surrey shirt. But talking of memorable performances then, I did mention his name, Daniel Bell Drummond, in my view, one of the most underrated players and underappreciated players in county cricket. He scored 2 centuries in this game. I've already mentioned the 102 in the first innings, but I would argue, actually, that his second innings knock was actually a bit more aesthetically pleasing, scoring 107 outs from 195 balls. He brought up his century with a lovely boundary. And yeah, he ended with 14 fours in total. Sam, I'll go to you first, mate. What do you make of Daniel Bell Drummond as a cricketer? Do you think that he should have been in and around the England conversation at an earlier stage in his career?
Look, I love him as a cricketer. He's a lovely human being, first and foremost. I love watching him bat. The real surprise this year has been his T20 form, the fact he Kent dropped him, and they sort of had to drop him as well. His returns were so measly. I mean, what was it, like 10 runs in 5 knocks? But he's actually quietly having quite a good county championship season. I mean, 200s in a single game. He scores runs in unusual areas. He's very wristy, scores a lot behind square on both sides. Really enjoy watching him bat. He had... was it a double 100? I've talked about it before. He got for England Lions, but it was kind of overshadowed because Ben Duckett got 250 or something, and they put on a ridiculous amount. So he was close, given he was probably more pushing for white ball stuff. And I remember a couple of years ago, he deliberately went and had a look at his strike rates and suddenly came back and was scoring much more quickly and has been one of the leading scorers in the Blast for a couple of years before this year. We just know, you know, you could reel off the list of white ball players that aren't going to get England caps, and you would have a potentially international quality side. So I maybe just a bit unlucky with his ear at. You never know, though, with the Kent connection. You can't keep picking Zach Crawley, however much the people that pick him like him. He's not scoring runs, but I don't think it's realistic for Bell Drummond. But I think he will be a bit... You talk about Proctor and Stevens. If he wants to, he can play and open the bat for Kent for another 10 years. So he'll be a legend down there.
He will indeed. And as I said, I feel like we just need to give him a lot more props. I think he's a fantastic player. I mentioned the words aesthetically pleasing. It's just great to watch. He really is. So big up to Deeps. I've thoroughly enjoyed both those innings this week. And just a bit of a milestone, actually, from this week's game, from another Kent player, funnily enough, an opener, Ben Compton, the first player in 2022 in Division 1 to surpass the 1,000 run mark. He's currently on 1,040 runs, averaging 86.66 with 4 centuries. So we talk about the England conversation. Ben Compton certainly not doing himself any disservice with his performances for the Aussies at the moment. But moving on then from that game in South London, let's head to our fourth and final Division 1 game for Round 9, which saw Gloucestershire and Lancashire play out a rain-affected draw in Bristol. Now, Gloss won the toss, elected to have a bat first in this game, which appeared to have backfired slightly. They were 214 for 7 within the first 69 overs of the innings due to some lovely bowling, and I'm really happy I get to mention this guy because there is a bit of a podcast connection between Jack Morley who took 4 for 91 in this game, and my co-host Joe Nuttall. In fact, I think they played against each other. So that's a nice bit of TCCP trivia for tonight's episode. But I thought he bowled absolutely beautifully. And of course, Tom Bailey. We talk about underrated cricketers. What a player he is. Every single week he's in the wickets, match-winning performances, game in, game out. He took 3 for 66 for the Red Rose in Bristol this week. But after that poor start, Gloucestershire actually began to find their footing as a result of a delectable century from one of my favourite players in county cricket, a certain Chris Dent. Matt, we've mentioned it before. I think long-term listeners know how much I rate and respect this guy, but 110 from 274 balls, his 20th career first-class century. He's just exceptional, isn't he?
Yeah, he is, isn't he? Yeah, I'm very much with you on the level of respect for Chris Dent. Yeah, no, he's a fantastic player. He's done it over so many years as well, hasn't he? He's got that consistency and that just that professionalism that's so invaluable. Because I mean, Sam, you mentioned it earlier that obviously county cricket is not just about being a breeding ground for England. It's about, you know, they're playing for, you know, that you can make a really solid, good career and you can provide a lot of people with a lot of cheer. You know, the county's really, when their county does well, and he's done it for Gloucestershire over so many years, probably knowing that he's never going to get picked up by England. I mean, you know, unfortunately.
He should have, though. Not.
Well, you know, maybe, that's his maybe. But what he has done is just produced the goods repeatedly over so many years, and he's earned that respect, and he's carried on doing it now, you know, and he's led from the front there, opened it up, clearly got the measure of the pitch quite early on, gone on and profited, and, you know, ultimately, he's got Gloucestershire, again, I talked about those bonus points, you know, some really valuable bonus points there. What more can be said? An excellent performance right at the top of the order.
Absolutely, Matt, beautifully put, to say the very least. And talking of those bonus points, it wasn't just Chris Dent. Of course, that 110 was pivotal, but Zafar Gohar as well, scoring 62. I thought that was a really impressive knock as well from the Pakistan international, 5 fours and a 6, which ultimately saw Gloss up to a respectable first innings total of 337 all out by the end of their first innings. Now, in response to this, Lancs didn't get off to a good start, which is very un-Lancashire-like. Luke Wells falling to the bowling of Tom Price in just the 6th over. But after that sluggish start, Lancashire began to flex their muscles in quite fine fashion. Keaton Jennings scoring 94, Stephen Croft scoring 80. We talk about players and legends of clubs. Stephen Croft is in that category for Lancs. In my opinion, part of the 2011 championship winning side, and he's just been a stalwart for the Red Rose of Lancashire for all these years. A fantastic player, to say the very least, across all three formats. And then Luke Wood as well, chipping in with 50. We talk about bowling all-rounders. Luke Wood is definitely in that category, as Lancashire ultimately went up to a total of 402 all-out by the end of their first innings. Now, unfortunately, and I do say unfortunately, the rain played spoil sport in Bristol this week, which meant that Gloucestershire were only able to play 61.1 overs in their second innings. But if we look at the wider picture, in both the title race in Lancashire's case, and, of course, Gloucestershire's survival chances. Sam, I'll pass over to you for this particular question, but of these two sides, who will be happier as a result of this draw?
Gloucestershire, I think. I think Lancashire would have seen that going away to the bottom side, and I just can't put my finger on what's happened at Gloucestershire this year. There's something, because I expected them to be much better than they are. That's a separate point. I think Lancashire, if you're going to, they'd have seen that as a 16 plus bonus pointer for them going down there. I mean, could they have been more aggressive and pushed the game on day three? Yes, they'd be looking potentially, but you're looking at weather forecasts. Well, I think the Lancashire hope was probably that Gloucestershire would bat on. They'd have got a full day today. Gloucestershire bats at about tee and set up one of these 180, 200 in 30 overs, have a go, and Lancashire would have been quite happy with that. I think Gloucestershire will be quite pleased to come away with a draw there. I wonder, and they wouldn't say this openly, and and maybe it's not their actual tactic, but in the back of their mind, they go to, they've got two games at Cheltenham coming up. They're strong there, and they play Somerset. They definitely go to Somerset. I'm not sure if they play Northants again. But it's about being in touch, I think. They don't want to lose touch. So actually, these days, with 8 points available for a draw, I think they'll be quite happy with that, actually, against Lancashire.
Absolutely, Sam. I'm in complete agreement. It's a massive, massive result for Gloss, as we'll touch upon in a second, actually, when we look at the tables. But for Lancs, yes, I suppose on paper, disappointing, but you can't do anything about the weather. You just can't, and it did play spoil sport. It is a shame because this was really nicely poised. It really was, and I felt like, you know, it would have been better if we could have seen a result, but it's just one of those, isn't it? Unfortunately, the British weather, it's just how it is sometimes, but it did rob us of what could have been a very good match down at the Bristol County Ground in round 9. But talking of the tables then, we've been alluding to them throughout the entirety of this segment. Let's have a look at the Division 1 table at the end of round 9. So at the top of the table on 143 points, still unbeaten in Division 1, a Surrey County Cricket Club. In second are Hampshire on 127 points. In third are Lancashire on 122 points. In fourth and fifth respectively, both on 96 points but with a game in hand over the teams above them are Essex and Yorkshire. In sixth are Warwickshire on 91 points. In seventh, a Kent on 84 points. In eighth, with a game in hand over Kent and Warwickshire, are Northamptonshire on 81 points. In ninth, on 61 points, are Somerset. And in 10th and bottom place of Division 1 at the end of round 9, are Gloucestershire on 53 points. So it's still all to play for. Still 6 games or 7 games for some of the counties yet to play. Division 1, I think, is going to come down to the wire. And it's going to be interesting with Surrey. If they do lose a game, could it be against Warwickshire? Who knows? But I do think that if Surrey lose a game, the title race could be blown wide open yet again. But moving on from Division 1 then, Matt, what a place to start Division 2 with than yourself, obviously at Trent Bridge, where Middlesex and Nottinghamshire played out a pretty high-scoring draw, didn't they, in the East Midlands this week. Unfortunately, it wasn't quite the blockbuster showpiece occasion, which we touted it to be in last week's show, but what did you make of the game itself at Trent Bridge this week?
Yeah, it was good overall. And, you know, there's some high quality batting, some high quality bowling on display. It was interesting when Notts obviously won the toss and opted to bat first. Trent Bridge is usually a bowl first place, isn't it? It's usually a trace, a fourth innings. It gets easier to bat on throughout. So it was interesting. And it was clearly, you know, when they were batting first, you clearly thought, oh, we're in this one for the long haul. You know, this is not a 3-day win, which has happened before, you know. So, and I mean, you know, not that it was ever going to be really because of the quality of the opposition by comparison. But it was good to watch. There was plenty of maybe more attritional periods of play. But overall, really entertaining. I mean, Lyndon James, absolutely delighted for him, 155, and his, you know, first century at Trent Bridge, absolutely magnificent moment. He batted faultlessly, I thought. You know, there were solid Haseeb Hameed as well, second century of the season, second against Middlesex. And then the bowlers as well. I mean, James Pattinson, we know about his character. He gives absolutely everything all the time, and he just carried on doing that, exactly that. And, you know, that was a tough strip to bowl on. And he managed to extract 4 wickets out of it. So, you know, that kind of shows what you're dealing with when it comes to him. Dane Patterson as well, you know, he's still got that really smooth action. They can get enable him to get through the tough over. It was tough. Hard, you know, hard cricket. Hard to, you know, you have to fight, you have to... maybe it was a little bit easier for the batters, but, you know, you have to fight to take your wickets, and both teams did that. And then right at the end, obviously, it ended quite entertainingly with Ben Duckett getting a wicket, which is only his second ever first-class wicket as well, and Tom Moore's having a bowl as well. You know, who does it like to see all 11 members of a team have a bowl when it's flat as a pancake competing out into a draw? But no, yeah, you know, punctuated by the odd bit of attrition, but overall, plenty of high-quality stuff, and pretty entertaining in the antidote.
Yeah, I'd agree with that assessment, to be honest, Matt. Very entertaining indeed. As you mentioned, Lyndon James, absolutely elated for him. 155 from 249 deliveries, 19 fours and a six. Stephen Mullaney also chipping in with 79 from 125 balls. And Liam Paterson-White, who's having quite the summer. He scored 50 from 73 balls. And talking of his bowling this time, that delivery, was it to Mark Stoneman?
To Stoneman, yeah. Ragged miles, didn't it?
Yeah, as a spinner myself, honestly, I could watch that all day. And for those who haven't watched it, go onto the County Championship social media. Just, oh, it's such a good ball. It really has turned an absolute mile.
It was like a leg spin delivery, wasn't it? I mean, I know it was. He's a left-hander, so it picked that side off stump. But it was like a leg spin delivery, and it turned so sharply back in. It was, yeah, opposite spin. It was excellent.
It really was. And again, absolutely no surprises with Liam Paterson-White so far this season. 29 wickets. He's the fifth leading wicket taker in Division 2 so far. So, again, quite the breakthrough season for LPW. But in terms of Middlesex's batting, after Notts piled on the runs, 551 for 8 declared from 132 first innings overs, Middlesex didn't have the greatest of starts with the bats, to say the least. They were 37 for 3 within the first 10 overs. But then Mark Stoneman, he dug in quite well, didn't he? 67 from 102 balls. Max Holden scoring 86 from 221 deliveries. And again, another player from Middlesex who I have a lot of respect for, Mr. John Simpson. A great gloveman, fantastic bloke, great guest here on the podcast. He scored 92 from 184 deliveries. So after that initial salvo from the likes of Pattinson and Paterson, I think Middlesex showed a lot of character. And obviously in the second innings, 261 for one declared, Robson and Stoneman tunning up. Middlesex showed quite a bit of grit, didn't they, Sam? In particular in that second innings to force a draw out of this game.
Yeah, absolutely. And they needed to. Big game. I mean, the first game these two sides played down at Lords was billed as a potential, you know, people talk about title deciders already. So it was really important that Middlesex didn't crumble, because it would have been easy to do that in the wake of a big score. And they just sorted themselves out in Championship cricket a little bit this year. Like, I didn't really... You know, you can be three down for not many. That just happens sometimes. It's the key is if it's happening consistently, then you're in trouble. But actually, Middlesex know they've got the quality. And you've got someone like Martin Anderson coming in at nine. That's relatively low for him in County Championship cricket. So they're a really good side, really good batting lineup. I mean, we talked about, yeah, it was second innings, he got his runs, but Sam Robson's very unlucky not to have been back in the England setup, I think. And maybe now with Bazball, he won't, you know, keep calling it. I hate myself for that's permeated into my brain.
I love
well.
It. I love Bazball. No, I think it's fantastic.
I really hate it. But look, I thought at the start of the summer, Sam Robson is probably in his peak years, and Middlesex are really enjoying the fruits of that now. He knows his game really well. Looks very comfortable, scores runs consistently. Nice to see Max Holden getting a chance in the Championship side as well. Probably about right for him, 4 or 5 in that middle order. So, yeah, let's be honest. If Notts don't win the league, they'll have messed up. It will actually reflect, they'll have had a bad season if they don't win it. But Middlesex are there and thereabouts in behind them, and there's a couple of other sides as well, not too far behind. So, really, the onus is on Notts to push for results, and they weren't able to do that. So credit to Middlesex.
Absolutely, Sam. Credit to Middlesex, indeed. As I said, showed a lot of fortitude, grit and heart with the bat, and that's all we can ask for. Again, it is a little bit of a shame. Obviously, it would have been lovely if there was a result and one of the two teams could have, you know, produced some distance between the other in the title race, would have blown it wide open for other teams in the table. But again, a fair result, a reflective result. I think both sides batted incredibly well. And yeah, I do think that it was warranted that the points were shared at Trent Bridge this week. But moving on then from that clash of the table toppers in the East Midlands, let's head down to the South Coast. Let's head down to Hove, where Sussex beat Derbyshire by 5 wickets in an astonishing game at the First Central County Ground. Now, just to give this some context, this is Sussex's first win in the county championship since the 18th of April 2021. 437 days. It's been a torrid start to their Red Bull campaign in 2022. They were rooted at the bottom of the table. This is a monumental victory for the Martlets. And to be honest, I'm very, very happy for their fans. So I just thought I'd get that in there first and foremost. In terms of how the game actually panned out, though, this, I would argue, is actually the most interesting fixture of the entire round, because Derbyshire didn't just declare once. They declared twice in this game and still lost. And again, there's a lot of debate and discourse on social media about that decision. But the Falcons initially won the toss. They elected to have a bat first and piled on the runs for fun. Wayne Madsen, we mentioned him last week, didn't we, Matt? Club legend, county cricket legend, over 13,000 career runs for Derbyshire. He scored a masterful 176 from 263 deliveries, 19 fours and a six. And someone who we spoke about before the show, Sam, because I know that you're a big fan of this guy, Anuj Dal, chipping in with a fantastic 146 now from 280 deliveries. For you, Sam, as a fan of Anuj's game, just how impressive was his performance down in Hove this week?
Fantastic. And he's got the honour of being, and I can't claim any credit for this. I mean, David Griffin is a lovely man, very funny. And what he hasn't got in his spreadsheet just isn't worth having. So it was Derbyshire's 1,000th first-class 100. Is that right? I think Anuj scored. I'm pretty sure that's a David Griffin stat. But look, Anuj, and we were chatting a little bit off-air about Alex Thompson as well. Derbyshire lost one of whom went to Sussex. Two big, big cricketers for them last year, Finn Hudson-Prentice and Matt Critchley, who both moved on for slightly different reasons, but, you know, Critchley went to play Div 1 cricket, Hudson Prentice went home. So there was a lot of runs and wickets that they're suddenly missing out of the side. And when you're a side who, whatever they did, they just couldn't come close to winning games, right? You suddenly lose those two players and you're thinking, what are we going to do this year? And the way that Thompson and Anuj have stepped up has been wonderful to see. I think it's not his first 100 of the season, is it, Anuj? He's been taking wickets, he's scoring runs. I love watching him run between the wickets. I don't think I've ever seen anyone quicker running between the wickets. And you see a lot. I mean, I used to watch Keyes, Wetter and Butler running together and they were sharp. But Anuj is brilliant. He's a lovely human. He's not had it easy. He's done the whole being at Nottinghamshire, his boyhood club, didn't get a game there, so went elsewhere, and so has had to build his career back up slowly. And it's brilliant to see him flourishing. And he's heavily involved in the PCA and things like that, so he does his extracurricular stuff, does his coaching. It's nice to see good things happen to good people, Aaron.
It is indeed. And again, what a fantastic knock it was down on the south coast. Unfortunately, as we'll discuss in due course, wasn't a match-winning knock for the East Midlands side, but yeah, very, very good personal milestone, to say the least. And what a stat that is. Again, shout out to Griff. He is an absolute legend, isn't he, in Derbyshire? Universally adored in the county. So yeah, that is a fantastic stat.
And you're all over stats usually, but it just shows how good and how many he comes out with. Mm-hmm. That would have just, if you go on his Twitter, that would be one of 50 from the 4 days that you could throw out and impress people with.
Oh, absolutely. And we've got another one, actually, from Griff coming in due course about the follow-on, that decision, which, as I said, hasn't gone down too well on social media, to put it lightly. But talking of Sussex's first innings, the Martlets got off to a pretty poor start, actually. They lost both Ali Orr and Tom Haynes within the first five overs to the bowling of Sam Connors. But after that, and it was a shaky start, and I'm so happy I get to say this, it was the Mohammed Rizwan show on the south coast this week. Maiden century for the Martlets, 130 from 227 deliveries, 22 fours over the course of that innings. Rizwan was one of those players that I identified at the start of the summer as someone I wanted to see play. I couldn't wait to watch him, and he showed glimpses of brilliance. He hasn't been able to, you know, produce these mammoth knocks just yet, but this week something just clicked. And that 130, some of the shots, the sweep shots, the drives, again, I come back onto that word, aesthetically pleasing. He is a delight to watch as a cricket badger. So Mohammed Rizwan, take a bow. Absolutely sensational, to say the very least, in Hove. But this, Matt, is where we get on to the main talking points from this game. Derbyshire had a lead of 214 runs, which is, as we all know, a very, very big lead. In fact, they could have enforced the follow-on. And this is where we come on to our big question for the week. What did you make of the decision by Derbyshire to continue batting when you've got a side which is towards the bottom end of the table, which is prone to batting collapses? You've got them there with a massive lead over 200 runs. Were you in favour of that decision, or do you think it was a case of maybe overconfidence or just a poor bit of tactical planning? What did you make of that decision from the East Midlands side this week?
Yeah, it was a weird one, wasn't it? I think it underlines, if nothing else, how much their culture has changed under Nicky Arthur. It's that willingness to, because you said overconfidence, and there might be an element of that creeping in. You know, it might be the case that almost Mickey has had such a profound impact on them in such a short space of time that they maybe are starting to think that they're, you know, they're going above and getting, you know, getting ideas above the station a little bit. But at the same time, you know, they want to back themselves with the bat now. It's, you know, that was last season, that was them at the bottom of the table prone to batting collapses. And I think, you know, to be honest, if they want to back themselves and prove that, you know, they want to, you know, we can bat on, we can really crush and put the, you know, fully put the game to bed by batting them out of the game, then I wouldn't be too, again, I mean, 214 is a funny sort of lead for me, because it's not, you know, Sussex could easily wipe that out and present them, maybe even with a tricky little chase. You know, it would have required a lot of application, a lot of quality on the part of Sussex, but it was possible. You know, it was, you know, maybe unlikely, but possible. So I'm not sure I disagree with it. I think for Derbyshire to throw down the gauntlet a little bit and say, no, we're going to back ourselves with bat in hand to push Sussex out, to get this to a point where Sussex cannot win this game. Obviously, it didn't turn out like that. But I can, like we said earlier with the Essex and Hampshire thing, hindsight is a wonderful thing. And to be honest, if I was in that position, I can understand it, actually.
That's interesting, Matt, because I would see it a little bit differently. But again, I'm someone who quite likes enforcing the follow-on. So, Sam, in fact, you actually might have to be our tiebreaker here. What did you make of the decision?
I'd have enforced the follow-on, I think, when you're on top. I don't know if it's the first time it's happened to them. Griffin will definitely know that it's unusual, but I think when you're on top, their strength has been in the batting rather than the bowling for Derbyshire. That is the one thing. So maybe they just thought they'd get something unassailable, and then suddenly Sussex, if they're a couple down, they're really up against it, and mentally they go. But yeah, unless your bowlers are really saying that can't do it, skip, then I think you should enforce it in that situation.
Well, there we go, folks. So that's two for the follow-on, one for batting. Again, though, it's an interesting topic of conversation. And again, hindsight's a fantastic thing. But for the listeners out there, let us know. Were you in favour of the decision? Please do feel free to give us your opinions using @thecountycrick2 on Twitter. But in fact, that whole conversation might not have stemmed, actually, if Derbyshire would have bowled a bit better. Because Sussex chased down 342 runs within just 73.1 overs. They did it with overs to spare on day four. And that was in massive part due to an outstanding century from Ali Orr, who, in my opinion, is one of the premier talents down in the South Coast at the moment. 15 fours, six sixes for Ali Orr this week. And it really was all or nothing, pardon the pun. But I thought he just delivered in such a big way for the Martlets this week. You think about that massive gap between victories over 430 days. For someone so young to shoulder that responsibility, to go, I'm going to be the one to take us across the line and get us as close as possible, which isn't really his style as well. He's usually a bit more gritty than 141 from 203 balls. I think he deserves immense credit. He really does. And then, of course, the man of the moment, Mohammed Rizwan, It was quite the game, 76 out from 82 balls, scoring 9 fours and 1 6. This is huge for Sussex, and obviously promotion, I think, is off the cards at this stage of the season. But looking at the wider picture, we mentioned the word transition. This is a very young Sussex side, and you've got to breed that winning culture, that winning mentality. We could be looking back on this in a couple of years' time and going, this was the catalyst which brought Sussex back into the Red Bull mix. So this is huge for Sussex. I'm delighted for their fans. It's been a tough season across formats, to be honest, so far for the Southern side. But yeah, what a game of cricket. Unlucky for Derbyshire. Yes, the wrist didn't pay off, but again, that's cricket sometimes. The exact same thing happened to Warwickshire last week when they conceded 164 runs in a session to Luke Wells. So yeah, heartbreak for Derbyshire, elation for Sussex, but yeah, an excellent win, to say the very least, for the Southern County. Sam, I believe that it's actually that part of the podcast now where you do have to say goodbye. We have actually ran over. We did want you on for an hour. It's almost been an hour and 10 minutes, mate. So apologies about that first and foremost. But before we say our goodbyes to you for the episode, Sam, do you have anything to plug or promote? Any social media channels, websites, anything like that?
No, thank you very much. It's been a delight to come on, Aaron. I always enjoy chatting to you about cricket. We could do it for hours, so the time is not an issue whatsoever. But no, nothing to promote. I just like plugging away, doing bits in the background, and I'll pop up occasionally. But yeah, been fantastic and lovely to meet you too, Matt.
You too, mate. Yeah. It's been a pleasant hour, mate. Yeah, thank you very much.
It has indeed. Yeah, it's absolutely flown by. But thank you again to Sam. And of course, we will leave his social media links in the podcast description below. But Matt, moving on then, onto our seventh and final game of the ninth round of the 2022 LV County Championship. We go to New Road, where Glamorgan beat Worcestershire by 3 wickets in an absolute thriller in the West Midlands. So in terms of the context behind this game, Glamorgan won the toss, elected to have a bowl first, and this surprisingly actually seems to have paid off at New Road, which is usually a more batting-friendly surface, as the Welsh side reduced the home side to 63 for 5 within the first 21 overs of their innings. But cometh the hour, cometh the man, as the old adage goes, Ed Barnard, Mr. Wiley, 131, his fifth career first-class ton in a 120-run sixth wicket stand between himself and Gareth Roderick. A few words on Ed Barnard, if you could, mates. Just how impressive of an all-rounder is this guy for the Pears?
Well, I'll spin that straight back on you, actually, and I'll ask you this question, and you know, I'll make my point clear. Is there a better all-rounder in county cricket in the country right now?
That's an excellent question.
Genuinely, who is there?
I think in Division 2, you could argue Ed Barnard is the best because of his versatility. You know, he bats well, he bowls brilliantly, and of course he's a gun fielder as well. In terms of overall all-rounders, again, there's 18 counties and everyone will say their respective all-rounders. Obviously the international ones, but I suppose you can't really count them in this situation.
I'm hoping we maybe don't include Ben Andrew Stokes in this, admittedly.
I was going to say, Ben Stokes, Sam Curran,
Jamie
Overton. The list goes on and on, but in terms of county pros, he is up there, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. Without a doubt, he's...
Along with Keith Barker.
And Simon Harmer, of course, yeah.
And Jordan Clark. There's quite a few now.
Here we go, there's loads. Yes, he is absolutely brilliant, isn't he? He's scoring runs for fun. He's a handy... I mean, I almost thought, you know, when he first came into the Worcestershire team, I think, you know, what was this, maybe 6-7 years ago, something like that, he started off as a bowler who could bat a little bit, didn't he? And now it seems like he's developed and matured into the point where he's a batter who bowls. You know, this was his, correct me if I'm wrong, at least his second century. And I want to maybe even say that it might be third century of this summer. I'm not completely sure on that one, but I know for a fact, obviously, it's not his first, after he got a ton against, a massive ton, in fact, against Notts at Trent Bridge. So the talent is, he's got it in spades, hasn't he? And it's just, he's really, really, and he's not that old, is he? He's still, you know, he's just about coming into that peak of his career. And yeah, he is another example of that Worcestershire production line where they just bring through their young players and produce their own. And yeah, it's worked. It largely works for them. Maybe results wise, it's not quite come off, but you know, the individual players that they produce are sterling, and he's yeah, the latest example of that, or one of the examples, one of the most notable examples of that.
Well, he most certainly is, Matt, and actually, as of this recording, he is Worcestershire's leading run scorer for the summer. 665 runs, averages 66.5, and you're spot on. He scored 3 centuries. So Ed Barnard, one of the hottest commodities in county cricket right now. It is public knowledge. We've seen it in that cricketer article from George De Bell. There is interest from other counties, Warwickshire being one of them. But I'll tell you what, he could honestly just go anywhere and succeed, couldn't he? Worcestershire are so lucky to have him. And yeah, in this game, this was just a prime example of why Ed Barnard is so highly sought after. He's such a fantastic cricketer, to say the very least. But after that batting performance from the pairs, who ended their first innings 271 all out, Glamorgan had an absolute shocker with the bat in hand. And I was really surprised by this. In fact, they bowled out for 139 within the space of just 44.3 overs. Now, don't get me wrong, Joe Leach, who is, of course, the master of New Road, he always seems to get 4 or 5 wickets on home soil. He took 6 for 44 from 13 overs. But for me, it was the dismissals. I felt like for some reason, Glamorgan came out this week and they were hurried at the crease. I'm not sure if that's just me. Again, that's just my personal perspective, but they seem to be flashing a lot, whether that was on a 5th, 6th ump line, just chasing deliveries. And at New Road, as I mentioned, quite batting friendly at times, it's all about digging in and accumulating runs over a period of time. So yeah, it was a very, very disappointing batting display from the Welsh side. In fact, aside from Eddie Byram, he scored 57. The next best score was 21, and that was from Tom Cullen. Other than that, again, no contributions at all. Sorter scored 15, and the rest were either ducks or single digits. So at this moment in the game, Worcestershire were well on top. In fact, they had a lead of 132 runs. And at this stage, all the pairs needed to do was bat sensibly. And unfortunately, they fell into the exact same trap. I felt, again, they looked hurried at the crease. I thought the likes of James Harris, he bowled very nice, controlled line and length. Michael Hogan, of course, the man, the myth, the legend, hashtag one more year Hogue, because you know you want to sign it. He took 3 for 42 from his 15 overs. And then, of course, Michael Nisa, who is just an excellent signing for the Welsh outfit. He took 4 for 50 from 19 overs. But again, it was just flashing at deliveries. It was flashing the blade. It was going for unnecessary shots. And unfortunately for Worcestershire, what could have been a 400-run lead turned eventually into a lead of 331 runs. And this is where we pick up the story, because Glamorgan got off to a pretty poor start. They lost the captain, David Lloyd, in the 6th over. He was dismissed by Charlie Morris for just 13 runs. Eddie Byram was the next man to fall, with Glamorgan on 78 for 2. And then there was a bit of a collapse. Sam Northeast and Kieran Carlson, the next two men to fall, leaving Glamorgan in a bit of trouble on 133 for 4 in the 49th over of their innings. But again, when you need the superstars to step up, they certainly do. And Colin Ingram, Kingram, as he's known in Wales, just did that quite sublimely in Worcester this week, scoring 102 from 203 deliveries. And he was aptly assisted by Billy Root, who scored 99 out from 172 balls. And some of the cover drives that Billy Root was producing this week were delectable. They really were just shots you could watch again and again and again. How impressive were those two at the crease for Glamorgan this week, Matt, in your opinion?
Yeah, really, really, really impressive. And that level of run chase, you know, as much as it's about the mentality as well, when you've not performed particularly well, you're chasing the game and, you know, you're chasing the result, essentially, in the back, in the 4th innings. That's really, really tough to do, you know, chasing the biggest score of the game to win. That takes a lot of mental edge. I'm not entirely sure about Michael Nees. I think, to be honest, right at the end, you could probably see, as they were walking up the steps to address him, you could probably see Billy Root having Michael Nees in a headlock. So what the hell are you doing after he's stranded on 99? Now, I admit I haven't seen that before. I don't know if it was a streaky edge or if neither really did decide to be. I doubt he did it intentionally. Or maybe he did, who knows? But the mental edge of it to do that, to pull that off, was really quite something special. And it just underlines how good a side Glamorgan are. And, you know, they're still the only team to beat Notts. Not that Notts are any sort of, well, not that Notts are any sort of special benchmark, but they are top of the division, and they've only lost once, and that's how with Glamorgan. Again, it underlines it. Yeah, it's a special victory for Glamorgan, definitely, and it's one that they will remember. They're indebted to those two, and one that they will remember for a while.
100%, Matt. A fantastic victory for the Welsh side, which, as you rightfully said, does keep them in the promotion hunt. As for Worcestershire, I'm going to be honest, and I do say this as a Warwickshire fan, I do feel quite sorry for them this season. I've actually done the maths on this. They've won 3 out of 20 games across formats. One of those, of course, being in the T20 Blast against my Bears, and then 2 in the Championship. I don't know what on earth is going on at the club at the moment, because this team are better than that. They've got a lot of talented players. I think the youngsters that they've got coming through, the likes of a Mitchell Stanley, the likes of Ben Gibbon, the likes of Jack Haynes, they've got some very good young talent in Worcester at the moment. But for some reason or the other, it's like they've gotten this losing streak in the T20 Blast, and they just cannot get out of it. So, yeah, worrying times for Worcestershire. I'm not saying they're completely out of promotion just yet. Of course, there's still 6 games to go, but yeah, they need to buck this trend a lot sooner rather than later, to say the least. But talking of that promotion hunt then, what a beautiful transition that is into the look at the Division 2 table at the end of the 9th round. Because at the top of the table, we've got Nottinghamshire on 146 points. In second, we've got Middlesex on 135 points. In third, after that incredible win at New Road, we see Glamorgan on 123 points. In fourth, at Derbyshire on 111 points. In fifth, are Worcestershire on 108 points. In sixth, are Durham on 98 points. And in seventh and eighth, respectively, at the bottom of Division 2, are Sussex and Leicestershire on 79 and 53 points, respectively. So, yeah, interesting times, to say the least, in Division 2. That promotion hunt is wide open, in my view. And I think this week has shown, actually, anyone can beat anyone. And you cannot discount the likes of Sussex and Leicestershire. There's no such thing as an easy win in county cricket. And the 9th round, I think, is a perfect example of that. So, very much looking forward to seeing how Division 2 pans out, and, of course, Division 1. And if you aren't already planning on going to a county championship match in 2022, get yourself down there. I absolutely implore you to get down there. You will not regret it. But Matt, that is essentially it for today's episode of the County Cricket Podcast. Of course, mate, all that's left for me to say is thank you very much again for taking the time. And the next time we reconvene, hopefully our two sides maybe have got a win on the board. We shall have to wait and see. Obviously, we've got Hampshire, so probably a lot less likely for the Bears compared to Nottinghamshire, admittedly. But yeah, fingers crossed next time as well, the weather will be a bit better. And of course, we have got all 18 counties in action in the 10th round. So that should be a fantastic episode, to say the very least. But that is it from us two here at the County Cricket Podcast for tonight's show. To each and every single one of you wonderful listeners, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.